Berg.
Good morning, Your Honor. Tom Berg for Eli Aviles Paniagua, whose last name is actually Aviles. But through the courtesy of various sheriff's offices, he has a number of permutations of his name. We're here before the court arguing a sentencing guideline issue. In the court below, I represented Mr. Aviles. We argued that his conviction for an enhanced misdemeanor burglary of a motor vehicle under Texas law was not an aggravated felony and not deserving of an 8-level increase under the sentencing guidelines for an illegal reentry after deportation. The district court disagreed and imposed the punishment, and that is the issue we are here on appeal for. As you look through the cases over the last 20 years trying to interpret burglary of a motor vehicle under Texas law, it's been a constantly shifting landscape. At the outset, it was a felony until 1993, then it became a misdemeanor. Judge Smith, you wrote an opinion back in 2000 in Lopez-Elias versus Reno. That was an appeal of a review of a removal order from the Board of Immigration Appeals, in which you held that burglary of a motor vehicle with intent to commit theft was a crime of violence. However, the cases that you relied on to come to that conclusion have since been questioned and indeed ultimately overruled by subsequent litigation, including the cases from the Supreme Court that dispatched the notion that driving while intoxicated was a crime of violence. What we are left with from that holding was that burglary of a motor vehicle was not a burglary in the generic sense, and it was not a theft case in the generic sense. And in light of the subsequent opinions from the Supreme Court.
What about the organized criminal activity involving burglary of a motor vehicle under the Rodriguez-Guzman case?
Well, organized criminal activity is simply a Texas approach to dealing with the confederation of people, in effect a conspiracy involving at least three people to commit the act, but the predicate act itself is still not a crime of violence. It's the misdemeanor burglary of a motor vehicle. So the fact that the conspiracy converts it into a felony makes it a felony, and that would make it subject to a 4-level increase under the sentencing guidelines. But that does not convert the predicate offense into a crime of violence. If we look to the definition of crime of violence, or at least one of the definitions of crime of violence, because there are multiple definitions within the guideline itself, but under Title 18, Section 16A and B, we know that it has to be an intentional, aggressive, violent conduct. And courts have subsequently held that burglary of a motor vehicle does not fit that definition. This court recently, in a case that was pointed out by the government in its brief, interpreting a Colorado statute which calls burglary of a motor vehicle trespass of a motor vehicle, specifically held that it was not a 16A or B crime of violence. So we're left with the circumstance that burglary of a motor vehicle or even a confederation to commit that offense is not a burglary, is not a theft, and is not at this point to be construed as a crime of violence that would make it an aggravated felony.
Ms. Burke, here we are not just looking at the misdemeanor crime, but the conviction was for organized criminal activity that the underlying crime was the burglary of a motor vehicle. Is that not correct?
That is correct.
And are you suggesting that the combination of these, well, the overarching crime, which is organized criminal activity that alleges a burglary, is not a violent crime?
It is not. The organized criminal activity statute covers a variety of offenses, from pornography and obscenity to certain assaults. And what it does is it increases the penalty for the underlying offense one level. So if you have a Class A misdemeanor in Texas law for burglary of a motor vehicle, if you have a group of three people or if you have a gang-related activity, then it becomes a state jail felony.
Okay, so we meet the kind of the felony aspect of the enhancement. I guess the problem I'm having is with the, is it or is it not that when a defendant does not have the effective consent of the owner, that the breaking in or entering into a motor vehicle or probably assumes some type of force?
It does not require force. You can simply open the car door and go in without the effective consent, with no breaking or force or violence. It doesn't fit a categorical setting, which is what we have to look at.
And did we have an indictment here or some type of charging instrument that was looked at?
The government has, I believe, included some language from the charge in their brief, but the indictment itself was not included in the record. It was not presented by the government.
And there's no allegations as to what that could be, what the charging document would say, other than what was...
what the government has provided in its brief. There is nothing to show that, and that would have been the government's burden below. And I contend that that's part of their failure to meet the burden.
But wasn't there evidence available to the district judge as to what the defendant had admitted to, and he set out the basic detail of what he was convicted of?
The judge asked him at the rearrangement whether the narrative by the government was true, and he admitted that it was, and admitted that he illegally reentered the country. It was certainly not an admission to a variety of underlying elements of the state offense.
Well, didn't he say at his rearrangement that he admitted under oath in July of 04 he was convicted of the offense of engaging in organized criminal activity, burglary of a vehicle? So that would have been in the record even though the charging instrument was not.
That was.
Okay, and can that also be considered if we're looking at the modified categorical approach?
I don't think that's an. I think that still requires the court to speculate to what the elements of the offense are, even under a modified categorical approach. We don't have that information in the record. We just have his admission to that conviction without knowing what that conviction entailed. We know that it was a felony. We know from the litigation in the court below and from the briefing here that it is a felony because it involved three people. But that the predicate offense was a misdemeanor, which I think all parties concede. And none of that converts this into the kind of crime of violence that we now understand is required under 16. So I think we're left with, as I stated at the outset, an offense which is not a generic burglary, it is not generic theft, and it is not a crime of violence under whatever definition we apply crime of violence to, because it doesn't involve injury to an individual, which is one of the definitions within the commentary to the guideline, and it doesn't meet the test for pervasive violence and aggressive behavior that is called into account when you look at the immigration statute, which also talks about a crime of violence.
Here it would probably be injury to the property.
I'm sorry?
Here it would be injury to property, the violence of entrance into breaking a window or the latch or something.
Or just, as I said, merely opening the door without permission. It would be entry into property, true, but not the kind that provokes necessarily violence. And that's really the issue for crimes of violence. They have to necessarily
Well, use of force.
And that is the gist of our argument, that the law has changed. The cases on which this court previously relied on have had, in essence, the legs cut out by subsequent changes in state law, in the guidelines, and, of course, in the Supreme Court's decisions, which have reined back some of the courts of appeals on what they believed was an over-aggressive interpretation of aggravated felony. And this offense is not an aggravated felony, so we have to go back for resentencing.
All right. You saved time for rebuttal.
Thank you,
Mr. Berg. Ms. Alanis?
May it please the court, Amy Alanis for the United States. Mr. Aviles was convicted of a felony, and it was a felony that by its nature involved a substantial risk that physical force could be used against the person or property of another. I'd like to first address the a lack of the indictment in the record. It does appear, I mean, there were recitations from it in PSR, and I believe that everybody had it. We had it in our, we were able to obtain it. And it shows that Mr. Aviles was charged with, of course, the engaging in organized criminal activity, conspiracy to commit burglary of a motor vehicle, and it said that he did commit the burglary of a motor vehicle. That was the overt act.
Are we talking about the charging document?
Yes,
well,
Judge.
You attached it to your brief, but I don't think it's in the record. In fact, I mean, I assume that's why you attached it to your brief, because it was not in the record.
And I apologize if I think I thought that you all had it, and I'm just doing that as a
But was it in the record before the district court?
I cannot say for sure that it was. I believe that everyone had it. No one ever bothered to say, you know, we're admitting this into the record. And, I mean, his argument and
I think we should assume then we can't consider it. I mean, you can certainly argue that we can consider it, but I don't really believe we can.
All right, Your Honor.
Well, you mentioned the PSR. You think there is some quoting of the indictment in the PSR?
I believe there was, and I do not have it with me.
Okay, we'll check it.
All right, thank you. I also want to talk about the Portillo-Colas case that Mr. Robles didn't cite in his brief, but I did bring it to the attention of the court. That case involved a Colorado statute that is just a very broad criminal trespass statute. It encompasses trespass of buildings, of dwellings, and of vehicles. And basically, in that case, in that case, Mr. Portillo-Covas was charged just that he had entered a motor vehicle with an intent to commit a crime. So, of course, it didn't fall under a burglary, didn't fall under a theft. And a panel of this court held that it was not a crime of violence because...
You mean 10... that was this court, okay.
Yes. Yes, Your Honor, it was this court. Basically, it said that there was no provision that... basically, you didn't have to act without the effective consent of the owner. You didn't have to break into the vehicle. It was just very broad and generic. It wasn't a crime of violence. I'd like to point out that the Texas burglary of a motor vehicle statute is very different. It requires breaking into and or entering without the effective consent of the owner, without the with the intent to commit a crime or a theft.
What is that? Is that 30.04D?
Yes, I believe it is, Your Honor.
Now, are you saying that in all circumstances, force is required?
No, Your Honor.
I'm having a little trouble with your argument. It seems to me that Mr. Berg has made quite a persuasive argument that the statute, the underlying statute, 30.04D, does not necessarily require force. We also know that the indictment, though it may, you know, you may be right that the PSR will have to look at the PSR, but let's assume that the indictment is not before us, that there is no indication in this record that force was an element of the misdemeanor below or the felony.
I think that's an accurate summation.
And therefore, do we have a Can we have an, a, what is it, a 12-point enhancement or whatever it is, based on aggravated felony, as a crime of violence that's an aggravated felony?
I understand, Your Honor, and of course, I've written my brief from the perspective of I have the indictment, I know what it charges him with, and of course, that was never their argument in the trial court. They never made any arguments about the charging any objection.
Am I correct then that we need to look at the PSR, and are you agreeing that if it's not in the PSR, then the government loses in this case?
No, I'm not agreeing. I think everybody had this. I think it was filed as an attachment to the PSR, but whether the PSR actually says that, I mean, you know how these cases go. Stuff gets filed.
Well, let's assume it's not there. Then we'll assume that it's
all
there.
Right.
Okay, but let's assume it's not there. Then there's nothing. There's, you know, then this thing fails, doesn't it?
Well, a person commits an offense, burglary of a motor vehicle in Texas, if without the effective consent of the owner, he breaks into or enters a motor vehicle or any part of a motor vehicle with the intent to commit any felony or theft. I think this differs very much from the statute.
So you're saying that the felony and theft part of it gives the substantiates the force?
I do, and also the breaking into part substantiates the substantial risk. Of course, we know that.
How about the entering, though? Breaking in or entering?
Entering could be a problem, and that was the problem with the Colorado statute.
Yeah, and so my point is, and I think you're agreeing with this, my point is that if there is no specific allegation in the indictment in this record that there's a breaking into, then this enhancement fails.
Well, if we don't know whether he broke into or he just merely entered.
Yeah, in other words, it does criminalize if a vehicle is unlocked, opens the door.
Yes.
He or she has committed a crime.
Yes.
But in that latter aspect, it does not necessarily require force.
Well, it doesn't necessarily require force, Judge, but I don't think that's really the test under 16B. There has to be a substantial risk of the intentional use of physical force against the person the property.
Yeah, are you saying that entering into that vehicle creates a substantial risk?
I'm not saying that merely the entry. I'm saying the entry with the intent, the entry without the effective consent of the owner with the intent to commit a felony or a theft. I think that is what satisfies 16B. And there's nothing in Portillo Covas, which of course is an unpublished case, that is in contravention of that notion.
Okay, now, what's your best case that is a crime of violence?
Well, I think the very best cases are the older ones, Rodriguez.
but you know, have they been effectively modified as far as their authority is concerned because of the misdemeanor, the change in state law?
Well,
or not?
If he had just been charged with a plain misdemeanor, burglary of a motor vehicle, we wouldn't even be talking, we wouldn't even be here. But I don't think the analysis is any different just because Texas declassified it from a felony to a misdemeanor. I mean, it's still a felony in this case because he did it in part of a combination. And of course, the whole gravamen of that engaging in organized criminal activity is that it is more serious when you're doing it in a group, in a gang, or in a pack. And I think that's something else that also supports the finding of crime of violence under 16B.
Yeah.
You're not just going in there by yourself. You're going in with backup.
Is the substantial risk is in at the very least enhanced.
Yes.
By the numbers.
I think we cannot ignore that in this case.
Sounds like you're about to say you're going to answer him further, so why don't you finish and then I'll ask you something.
All right, I was just going to say he Judge Garza had asked about the best cases. I think they're Rodriguez Guzman, Ramos Garcia, Judge Smith, and a case called Lopez Elias back in 2000 also found that burglary of motor vehicle was a crime of violence. Those are probably the very best ones.
Well, let me ask you about Ramos Garcia. I mean, it seems like the import of that is that the nature of the crime itself, burglary of a vehicle, created a substantial risk of damage or harm to property. Now, at that time, it was a felony. I think the organized criminal activity, as your argument, creates the felony aspect of this, and so it's felonious if you do it in a group of three or more. And your crime, this burglary of a vehicle, by its nature, maybe not in this case, but by its nature has a substantial risk of damage to property. Is that still good law in light of, is Ramos Garcia still good law?
I think it is. Ramos Garcia was really based on Rodriguez Guzman. And in Rodriguez Guzman, he had committed two prior felonies. One was burglary of a building, and one was burglary of a motor vehicle. And the court kind of analyzed them together, but I think the reasoning is still good. The Rodriguez Guzman and Ramos Garcia, by extension, it takes you through the whole 16B analysis. And, you know, it says, in this is in Rodriguez Guzman, a substantial risk that an event may occur doesn't mean it has to occur in every instance. A substantial risk requires only a strong possibility that the event, in this case, the application of physical force during the commission of the crime, will occur. And I don't think that reasoning has changed at all. So I think that's still sound.
And as far as you know, the language of wherever the burglary vehicle is, 30.04 or something like that, at the time, a Ramos Garcia would have said breaks or enters into the way that it does now, that
yes,
physical force was not necessary at that time, beyond opening the door or something.
It has always said breaks into or enters. Of course, the indictment was breaks in and enters, and that's what he pled guilty to. But yes, the language remains the same.
So he pled guilty to both.
And in this case, he pled guilty to specifically with the intent to commit theft, which supports my secondary and my third argument, which you could also look at these as attempted theft offenses, or you could even look at it as an attempted conspiracy to commit theft. But of course, that would have to depend on the indictment to narrow it down.
I would defer to our presider, but you might want to present a 28-J letter that, if you find in some part in the record the charging language,
both
in PSR or something else, you could tell us where it is.
I certainly will do that. If there were no more questions,
yeah,
I'll
thank you, Ms.
my
Ines.
Time.
All right.
Thank you.
Mr. Berg, save time for rebuttal.
Mr. Berg, how about that last statement by Ms. Alanis, that your client pled to both breaking in and entering, and the breaking in being the substantial risk of a felon, I mean, of force.
Judge, I will probably have to get back with the court as well to make sure that that's exactly what happened in the lower court and that it's of record.
Yeah. Usually,
because that's not my recollection.
Yeah, usually indictments are and instructions are or. My recollection, and so they indict everything, but they can prove only one of those, and that's enough.
But my recollection is we did not have the indictment below. We have the judgment from the court, but not the indictment itself,
okay,
the charging instrument.
Okay.
And I will go back and confirm, but that was my recollection from being in the court below. I think the best case is Armando Armendariz Moreno, which was on remand from the Supreme Court. And Judge Garza, you were on the panel for Armendariz Moreno when it was first affirmed and then after it was set aside after remand. And that particular case held that the generic crime of violence or aggravated felony must itself involve purposeful, violent, and aggressive conduct. And that was the one that dispatched unauthorized use of a motor vehicle as an aggravated felony.
Now, if your client did plea to breaking in, that is sufficient. Assuming that it's that the indictment charges that and it's in the record. I mean, there's a lot of hurdles to this. There's a lot of hurdles in this thing. This is just not an airtight case by any stretch of the imagination.
Exactly. I'm not going to concede.
You don't want to concede, but that's correct.
I do believe that generically the misdemeanor offense of burglary of a motor vehicle is simply not a crime of violence by how we now view it in 2012, whether it was a breaking or merely an entry. We simply know that it can be committed generically without the kind of violent and aggressive conduct that would make it subject to being a crime of violence.
You got 2 minutes left. You better continue. Forget about my questions, Seth.
Well, if y'all don't have any additional questions, I think I've made my case.
All right. Thank you, Mr. Berg. Your case is under submission. We notice that you're court appointed. We always appreciate your willingness to take the appointments, even though you didn't get a trip to New Orleans this time.
But I got a trip down the street, so I'll hold that against you for next time. Thank you very much, Arthur.